This is Kilo Baker 2, Sierra Quebec. My name is Paul. Net control for the Thursday evening Metroplex Net. We meet every Thursday evening at 8 o'clock local time. And all amateurs are cordially invited to join the net. I am operating on the Echo Link, and I'm linked into Metroplex. So if anybody's having a problem with the audio on Metroplex, you'd be welcome to link to me. I'm listed on the KB2SQ. My node number is 9594. My node number is 9594. If anybody wants to check directly into me, you're having audio problems with the Metroplex repeater. Again, my call is KB2SU. Name is Paul. Are there any mobiles out there that would like to check into the net? Mobiles only. Call KB2 Sugar Queen.
WB2 KZX checking in. Mobile.
Okay, WB2. Okay, there was my phone went off. WB2 KZX. Jerry, we have you checked in Mobile. Good evening, Jerry. Come aboard and check in from the Mobile. KZ2 Silver Queen.
Good evening, Paul. Checking in Mobile. I decided to join the net every Thursday night because usually I'm either on my way home or that's, you know, during the summertime, it's still enough daylight to fool around with the radio to make adjustments in the car. So basically, I think this is a little better than last week. I'm running a couple of, you know, discrete antennas. They can't be seen from the outside of the car. And I'm running, I'm not sure, either 35 or 50 watts. I haven't done the complete tune-up, which I'll save for after the event. Back to you, Paul.
Okay. Either running 35 or 50 watts. Okay, well, it's good signal into the repeater. I think I'm having some difficulty with the repeater dropping out. I'll see if it happens on my next transmission with someone else, Jerry. But appreciate you checking in with us, Jerry, from the Mobile. And let's break to Jerry and let's see if we have other check-ins. Now, I have listed Kilo Charlie 2, Tango Victor Fox. I heard Harold check in earlier. I have you checked in, Harold. And I have KC2DHU, Jim. I have you checked in. I see you on Echo Link here also, Jim. Do we have additional check-ins before we continue with the list? KB2, Sugar Queen.
Yay, using a handheld. Good evening.
Okay, someone said they're using a handheld, but I didn't get the beginning of that. I'm on Echo Link, by the way, so you may have to call, give a promotion for 3 or 4 seconds. KB2, Sugar Queen, Echo Shelter.
Only need some help how to put the memory, our repeater, to be able to check something else. Thank you, Paul.
Harold, why the heck are you talking over people trying to check in? This is AE2AA using his handheld this evening. You copying me, Paul?
W2MPX.
Wow. What the hell? Yes, I'm copying you, AE2AA. Walt, I have you checked in also. Good evening to you. Using your handheld. Copy the sign there. Stand by, Walt. Looking for additional check-ins. Let me see. Hal, KC2 Tango Victor Fox. Go ahead with your comments.
No way, Paul. I didn't get your previous transmission because Hal talked over you. Will you continue your entire transmission?
Okay. using a handheld. QSL?
QSL, thank you, Paul, because I didn't get the previous transmission. There was somebody talking over you continuously. Okay, I'll stand by and wait my turn. Good evening to everybody checked in.
Pulse, W-A-2-S-H-A.
W-A-2-U-E-E.
WA2SHA, the Echo Link has hung up and has not been connecting. These are some of the problems we're having with that damn stuff.
Hey,
come in, Armin.
I'll tell you, I'm tired of it. I really am, you know.
Maybe it's time to pull the plug on the whole nine yards.
Maybe. Yeah, I'll wait a while, but then I'll shut it down. I mean, to shut the whole darn thing down.
WB2KZS, K2QDN.
Let me think. The mind is garbage. Hey, Jerry?
That is correct. But it's Whiskey Bravo 2 Kilo Zulu X-ray. Yeah. Basically, I'm amazed. You know, almost every other repeater I'm on, you know, there's really no problem with Echolink. In fact, two Saturdays ago, I spoke to a guy in Saudi Arabia on the Limark repeater, and it's baffling, you know, how this one seems to have problems. I don't know. Maybe it's operators rather than the actual electronics, but I don't know. I just can't say. Back to you.
WB2KZX, K2QDN. Well, it's like we used to see on the television. Due to technical difficulties beyond our control, you know, the station is momentarily interrupted. So, I'm not all that familiar with the inner workings of Echolink. When it works good, and when it goes bad, it goes real bad. So, I don't know what the story is, and I particularly, you know, I don't use it. I have no need, but there are people who can't put up antennas and stuff that have a need. However, Echolink does have a dark side. Hey, listen, at least we can have a QSO tonight on the machine for what it is. And, Jerry, I think you said you're in a mobile. The audio sounds almost like you got a slight echo. It might be my ears, though. But it's almost like you're in a, you know, a hollow room, which isn't normal for a mobile. However, it's not important. KB2KZX, K2QDN. Again, the handle's Mike, by the way.
Yeah, did you guys hear me when I said I'm here too? AE2AA.
Hello? No, actually, Walt, I didn't hear you. I think I'm too quick on the button.
Yeah, okay, Mike. I want to commend you this afternoon. And I also say hello to Jerry. Jerry, I do agree with Mike. You have like a echo like you're in a warehouse or something. I don't know what that is. You got an extremely good signal, however. Over to you, Jerry, AE2AA.
Fine business, Wolf. The reason it's an echo sound is in Infiniti. They are... Nissan makes a real quiet cabin. You can't hear anything in it. That's all I can say. People have remarked on that, and I don't know why. There's no other explanation for it. The audio system in the car, you know, I'm talking about AM/FM radio, CD player, MP3 player. Generally sound very good in it, but I got a feeling it's because they did a good job on the acoustics. From the driver's seat, this is the way it sounds. If I move to the back, it's almost like a Doppler effect. You know, people have recorded it and played it back to me, especially when I traveled out of the region with the car. Back in the rotation to Mike. This is WB2KZX.
WB2KZX, K2QDN. I don't know, Jerry. I've been in this business an awful long time. And from what my ears are hearing, that is a very slight echo. It's really not a quiet cabin, because that would have a totally different sound. An echo is that hollow, tinny-ish sound, and a very minute time delay on it. And believe me, you got it. And the fact that if you get in the back seat, it's even worse. There's a characteristic about that car and your audio you know, your speech that seems to want to reverberate. It's not serious. It's just odd to hear such a thing in a mobile. You know, it would have the sound of being, if you were talking in a rather large tiled room or a bathroom or something that really has very little acoustic absorption. Okay, that being said, AE2AA, the man from Jersey City, K2QDN.
Okay, I just paused in case any remnants of the net we're going to find in. I think Eddie Armin will be trying to get it in. Okay, good enough. AE2AA. Yeah, that's exactly it. You just don't expect to hear such acoustics from being in a car or whatever. So your audio is really good, though, Jerry, and it's a real pleasure to have you in here with such a nice signal. Okay. Well, I never got the chance to say too much over the net. I personally don't know what the heck happened. Something glitched something. It was like a transmission from the repeater constantly with no audio. So that would make sense that it was probably the echoing. But it was weird, you know. There was so much walking over and stuff happening there. It was sort of like the three-ring circus, and I could understand Paul, you know, just wanting to back it in. It was,
U2MPX connected server. This server records your transmissions and plays them back to help
you. Oh, shut up. For 440 is really a good thing, so... That's my opinion on that. I think you and I pretty well see eye to eye on that, Mike. Let me say that I'll keep it short. Let's take a little break in between to see if anybody else is signing in, and I'll send it over to Jerry. Pick it up, Jerry. This is AE2AA on his handheld in Bayonne, New Jersey now. We used to live in Jersey City, Mike. Pick it up, Jerry.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, for the last bunch of years since I had this car, I have all kinds of comments. This is probably the most common comment, you know, about the echo. It's almost like a few milliseconds behind my actual speech. Or it could be that I am one of these creatures from the program D. Anyway, I was doing some testing tonight in the mobile, and I decided to come into the net, you know, as usual, since I'm in the car at this time, most Thursday nights, trying to work out this new antenna system I have. Anyway, back to you, Mike.
WB2KZX, K2QDN. Well, basically, I got about half your transmission because some other station, I don't know if it's EchoLink, you know, it made the announcement like it did before that this server records all messages or something, and it kind of took you out of the picture for half the transmission. It comes in like it's EchoLink, but I'm not sure. But anyway, it's disrupting things here, and I hope Armin is still listening. But see, these are the problems, that the station becomes, our station, our repeater, becomes vulnerable to outside influences that are very difficult to control. Oh, well. Fuddy-duddy, you know, the old-fashioned way, you pick up the microphone, you key it, and that's what you got. And you want to talk on a computer? Well, then you talk on a computer, but the two should never be linked. To link the radio to the computer is, I don't know, counterproductive in my way of thinking. Anyway, you know, you see, Jerry, Walt and I are probably older than you are, so you got to start thinking like an old fart when you start collecting Social Security. AE2AA, or anybody else that wants to join this madness, K2QDN.
Gentlemen, temporarily on a landline, so I'll take a bypass for a couple of, at least a round anyway. AE2AA.
UA2SHA here.
To say good night, I understand all the problems this repeater with Echolink has, and I hope it's going to be resolved. I don't have any clue what happened at your area, Paul. Until then, I say goodbye to Walt, Paul, Arvin, and the whole crew who tries to resolve this problem. Until then, good night to everybody.
UA2SHA here.
Yes, WA2SHA. Welcome. Did you hear that Walter's last transmission with the other thing that came in on top? Could you tell if that was Echolink or RF?
Echolink making an announcement. It makes a general announcement once in a while. You put it very well, Mike. You can't control what the Echolink puts out. We have no control of that. It's not connected to the repeater in any way that we can control it. It does what it damn pleases.
Now, here was the middle of Walt's transmission, and I lost half of it because it decided to make an announcement. And, you know, my original statement, if you want to talk on a computer, stay on a computer. You want to talk on a radio, you talk on a radio. The two should not be linked. It's apples and oranges. It may work for some stations, but it don't seem to work for ours. I would suggest we just pull Echolink, period, and leave it off for 30 days, no Echolink, and see what happens. Because, you know, I could be having a legitimate conversation with you, and some other station decides to come in on Echolink, and you have no control over what's going to happen next. And I hate to be in a position where we got no control of our own machine. Not to say that some idiot with a handheld couldn't cause us a lot of grief also, but I think you get the general idea. And WA2SHA, K2QDA.
What I'm really saying is it's a flawed technology, obviously. Of course. It's not an integrated technology. Echolink is a patch. It's an add-on to an already existing, pretty well-operating repeater system. It really doesn't belong there. You know, it's like a monkey on its back. That's what it really is. Echolink is a monkey on a repeater's back. It's a problem, and I've said that for 2 years now. Maybe people will start realizing it.
Oh, well. I don't know what else to say. And anyway, Walt's tied up, so let's send it back over to Jerry. I don't have to think we don't like him anymore. WB2KZX, K2QDN.
Well, I have two things to say. First, I have to get this out of the way. I've been collecting Medicare since last October. Although I'm not retired, I'm collecting Medicare. I reached the age. So I think I'm at least as old as you. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about Walter. Second comment was, who was that masked man? Somebody signed off as I was ending my transmission. But in any event, I'll let it go for now, and I'll have some more comments about Echolink after I gather my thoughts. Back to you, Armin.
Okay, Jerry. Yeah. Well, welcome to Medicare. I've been on Medicare 11 years now. You know, I'm going to be 76 pretty soon. Yeah, well, I have comments about Medicare, too, and the government that I won't say over the air. Let's put it that way. But at any rate, you know, I hope you're taken care of well and everything goes good for you. And I hope you retire soon and start to enjoy life, you know, and do the things you want to do. And don't have any more bosses looking over you either, you know? Retirement is a great thing, Jerry. You're really going to enjoy it. I don't give away other people's ages if they want to give their ages away, but I think I'll clear it up by saying I'm the oldest one of the whole bunch. Over to QDN. What do you say about that, Mike? WA2SHA.
WA2SHA, K2QDN. Well, Armin, all I can say is better you than me. Hey, listen. If Jerry's on Medicare, then I got to be the baby of the family. I'm only on Social Security. I'm 62. Holy smokes. I'm going to need diapers, man. You guys are all over the hill already. I feel like a young buckaroo in this company. Oh, man. Wow. Yes, well, listen, at least we're growing old gracefully, you know. It beats the alternative of not growing old at all. That's scary. So I'll take what I got, you know. Listen, any day that you can get out of your own bed, under your own steam, and make it to your own bathroom, it's a good day. And, Jerry, I hope you collected your thoughts. I'd hate to see them getting out of control. WB2KZX, K2QDN.
Harold, KC2PVF. Jerry, I wish you all the best and collect as you can from the government. I hope to see you soon and enjoy. And at the same time, all the best to all the fellows who gathered tonight and saw the problem with Echolink. Anyhow, all the best, good night. I'm signing off. Harold, KC2PVF.
Well, now I know who the masked man was. Harold, good evening, and thank you for the best wishes. I wish I'd done something to deserve them, but anyway. Back to Echolink. If only they could find a way, and this is going to sound really, really crazy, if there was a way that Echolink could only be accessed by the repeater instead of the opposite way, I think that we might have a better type of system. In other words, the repeater remains active, and it can only be accessed by the Echolink crowd when the repeater is on, instead of initiating the repeater from Echolink. I know that sounds bizarre, but I feel it would be a better control situation. What do you think about that, Armin? This is WB2AZX.
Just invented ILRP, Interlinked Radio Protocol. That's what you did. Very good, Jerry. You're a true inventor at heart. That was good. That's good thinking. I'm going to tell you. And that's exactly how Echolink should be operated if you're going to use it at all. And what it involves is a controller board that has a link, a radio link port on it, which means either a second repeater or a linked receiver or a linked transmitter. We have that controller up there in the towers. However, we can't put Echolink up there easily because, first of all, it's a very difficult place to work in. You would want to have more equipment up there than we got now. Thank goodness this repeater is holding up for 2.5 years. And it's very difficult to get in on weekends. You need special passes and all, see? The other thing is that the you would need a broadband connection up there, which would cost probably about $50 or $60 a month. It would have to be a commercial connection. It's just as impractical as all heck to do it. But that's what you did. It's ILRP, where the computer that communicates with the Echolink scene is connected directly to a port on the control board of the repeater, which means the repeater has total control over what Echolink does or doesn't do. And it can't take control of the repeater and steal its operation. Control operator always has control over it. Very good, Jerry. Okay, that's good. Okay, over to Mike. Pick it up. WA2SHA.
Well, in the words of Marvin the Martian, oh, dread these computers. They're so naughty and so complex. Oh, man. Whatever happened to crystal radios? How did we live before there were computers? You know, radios were here first. That should have something to do with it. But Alan, you're right. You know, it's a flawed technology. Yet, you know, for some people, you know, it comes in handy to use it. But, like everything else in life, it's got a dark side. And that is sometimes, you know, you're trying to have a decent conversation and people are coming in and they got nothing to say and the thing puts up an identifier which cuts you out and you got nothing, no way to stop it. So, yeah, the only outgoing would be wonderful, but too complex for our budget. And that's just the way I guess it's going to have to be. So, I don't know if Walt is back yet or is he still on the telephone. Must be his girlfriend or something. His wife will probably kill him. Anyway, that being said, not being a big advocate of Echolink, I'm the wrong person to even talk to. If it was up to me, I'd pull the plug on it, and never again would it be on Metroplex. However, I am not a power to be, and it's only one man's opinion. KB2KZX. K2QDN.
You got me in the wrong era. It's WB2KZX. I preceded that era by 25 years. Anyway, Walter, now that I'm coming up with these half-baked ideas, I wonder if you remember AutoPatch. I bet you do. How about connecting, I know it's dial-up with us because we can't get a broadband link because of the expense, but how about, remember how AutoPatch used to work? How we used to get into the phone line that way? Remember the system? We used to dial in the tones, and we had the numerical sequence, and up the AutoPatch used to come. Well, perhaps that would be a way of turning on Echolink. What do you think, Armin?
Back, guys, so I'll just listen for the moment and pick it up next time.
No, Jerry, and it's not, there's no known way of using Echolink over the telephone line right now. But I remember the AutoPatch days very well with Alex, where he managed it, and he did a great job managing it. It was a very difficult system to handle. But remember that Alex had the entire repeater and the controller in his own apartment. So he had, you know, great access to everything. He also had a, you know, sort of a toll-free line so people could call all over the country through his AutoPatch system. They don't do that much anymore. In fact, it's practically dead because of the cell phone. In those days, they used to make controllers for repeaters that had AutoPatch ability, and that's what we had before I built the new repeater. I built the new repeater. I used all new parts, all new controller, new everything. There's nothing left of the Alex system. We sold that controller that Alex had. It was a particularly good one at the time. It was made in the 80s, early 80s, and it had AutoPatch capability. But it was the most complicated thing to use, as you can imagine. And it had about 500 lines of code in the darn thing, you know. AutoPatch is a dead technology, though. It will no longer be used. And, of course, like I said, telephone lines are not suitable for Echolink. At the present moment, nobody figured out how to do it. K2QDN, WA2SHA.
AE2AA.
AE2AA. The boy from Bayonne is back. K2QDN, pick it up, Walt.
Hey, okay, good enough. Mike, thank you. AE2AA. Yeah, well, here,
There's obviously, I agree with you very much, Mike, in reference to the echoing. But like I said, back in 1990-95, I would have welcomed the system. Of course, I do not, and I will repeat, I do not favor the DTMF phone access, and arming those why you just said why is obviously not a reliable system for us for various reasons, okay? First of all, it's really software decoded using a sound card rather than using a much more precise, much more better filtering, much more better everything IC decoder for DTMF. I've worked with those a lot during my days of working as a telephone engineer or actually commercial electronics. So I can see these things happening, especially with the different quality signals that are available and so forth. And the fact that we're actually operating a box system when we should be working more like a core or a PTT system, something that's more positive than box. Norm and I have discussed the timings involved and the potentials and so forth. So, you know, I have 2 years' experience before I became active again in 2003, 2004. I did use the Echolink system that we have when Bobby was running it, when Tommy was running it. And I enjoyed it for the 2 years. We would often have round tables with 5 or 6 of my buddies from the internet hams, you know. One guy in Canada, a guy in Wisconsin, a guy in Florida, a guy in North Carolina. And we have that round table, and sometimes I'd be on RF, and so would Paul Lynch and some of the other folks. And we had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It was, you know, something that was really good. Once I got back on the air, I took the Echolink program out of my computer. And that was it. Never used again, so to speak. So that's it, as far as I'm concerned with that. I was monitoring while I was taking the phone call as best I could. And, I think that eventually we'll get this thing back squared away again, but it's going to have to be... I'll let it go to Jerry. Pick it up, Jerry, AE2AA. Jerry, are you copying me?
This is WB2KZX. I'm on a landline. I'm still in, but Mike asked me for this round.
Okie dokie. So how about going to Mike and you can send it to Armin. AE2AA.
AE2AA, K2QDN. Damn them telephones, you know. They interrupt more QSOs. Life was simpler when less people had cell phones. Life was simpler a lot of years ago. Because we didn't think so then, but looking back, I don't know. It was just simpler then. Oh, well, what are you going to do? But it is interesting. It's always good to have a healthy discussion. And, well, you know, you can't please everybody. There were guys like me that would just as soon unplug Metro Echolink, and there's probably others who would fight to the death to keep it on the machine. But, well, that's what makes life interesting. It's the difference of opinion. However, my vote is still unplug it. Let's go back to the old-fashioned way, you know. Radio. If you want to talk on a computer, as you did, Walt, fine. That's good. But to link the two together, Echolink is a fine unit to work computer to computer. But to hook it up to a radio station, to me, serves no purpose. You know, if you can access it with a microphone, why not just access it with a computer and be done with it? Why do you have to tie it to a repeater and cause others a lot of grief? Especially when people come in, they just sign in to see if anybody's on the frequency, and it comes up with an enunciator. you know, it signs in, it signs off, but now it's disturbed us because somebody is going down a list of numbers and they decided to pay us a visit for no rhyme or reason, just to see if there's anybody on. Meanwhile, it disrupts the QSO going on because of the enunciator that comes in. Oh, well. See what you started, Armin? W-A-2-S-H-A, K-2-Q-D-N.
I really didn't start it, but I was, you know, one of the first to talk against it. A lot of little things combined to bring us to the point at which we are today. A lot of little incidents that occurred over the last month, I'd say. So it came to a head, you know? And no decision has been made, you know, absolutely, of what to do about it. Not yet. So things are still, you know, on track. And there's going to be a lot of discussions among certain people on how to do this and how to do that and how to eliminate this and that and whatnot. But at any rate, yes, I want to go back to the old days. I told you that this morning, Mike. I want those old tubes back again. I'd like to go back to days before solid state when tubes were king. I want to be back there. I really, really enjoyed myself in those days. They're the greatest days I ever had. I'll tell you. What do you think of that, Jerry? You know, how about you and I going back to the old tube days? What do you think of that, Jerry? Over to you, W-A-2-S-H-A.
Well, you're forgetting something. I used to have tube jobs, and they were the absolute pits when you had to operate mobile. They were great in the shack. There's so many good things I can say. But one of the things I can't say is that mobile operation was wonderful with tube equipment. It really was not. And I got to tell you, you know, my first mobile rigs were AM. You know, this was in the days just beginning, you know, when repeaters weren't that popular. And I got to tell you, not fun. It was only when the smaller 5 and 10 watt rigs in FM or mobile came about that I began to really enjoy mobile. The other thing is we used to have to keep the stupid log, which they didn't discontinue, I think, until the 70s. That's what I think of tubes, in every aspect except for that.
Should I pick it up now? Why not?
Right, that works for me. A2AA to group.
Yeah, well, Mike, you bring up another point. Exactly. You know, when you have a system like that, there's no way that the person on the internet knows that the RF part of the deal is in use. You know, the system wasn't designed for touch tone. Somewhere along the line in the second rewriting of the program, somebody guessed it in, and that's what we got. As Armin says, there are better ways of doing it on 2 meters between the internet and our repeater. So that is one definite thing, you know, that's a problem. But, you know, you can overlook things like that because it's nice to sometimes invite the person into the queue. So, say, how you doing out there? The person will be happy to make one round and say, hi, this is so-and-so, nice talking to you. That's usually the case. So, it's not the worst thing, you know. I know certain people like to talk to certain people, and that's it. And that's not something that I'm making as a facetious remark. But that's the way operation is. You know, everybody to their own favorite there, so to speak. But there is a definite thing that has to be worked out. I mean, it worked good 2 years that I know of, the way it was without, you know, DTMF access. And that only makes it more complicated, especially what we were referring to, you know. And
lack of communications back and forth sometimes. You know, just not enough synchronization, not enough information, decoded fast, and things like that. It's a gas subsystem when you use DTMF, that's for sure. It'll work great for some people and not so great for others, I'm afraid. So yeah, the Army, we haven't made up a firm decision yet, so let's see what happens. Let's give it a little more time. And let's all calm ourselves. I did the best I could to communicate between the person that's responsible for the repeater and the person that was responsible for the echolink. And I think both people did an excellent job in dealing with that situation. All right? I'm afraid I didn't have time to inform Paul to take the two Sugar Queen, who does the... Now I'm going to pick it up again. I'm not going to give it up. Let me see if I gave enough time to reset. I know the repeater has the time down, but I haven't changed my HT yet to take up a little less time. A little more time, I should say. But, and my hand gets hot, you're holding on to this thing right away. Anyway, as I was saying is that, you know, sorry, Paul. Got a little upset, but, you know, this happens. I just couldn't make three phone calls simultaneously. And he was the next guy when all of a sudden repeaters are back on, and I was the first person to tell Paul everything was up and going. So I hope he understands that. You know, I try to do my best, and I can't regret it. All right, enough on that subject, and let me turn it over to you, Mike, I think it goes to you. So, K2, Porters, Dimes, and Nichols. This is the group. This is AE2AA.
AE2AA, K2QDM. Well, Walt, you said something a while back that I would have to take exception to. When I first started fixing two-way radios commercially, which was pretty much my first job out of high school, the Motorolas and the General Electrics that the company had, they were all vacuum tube radios. They worked okay. You know, Motorola made them the best. The GEs weren't too bad. They worked. They were a little bit old by the time I even started work. That would be 1968. Yeah. I don't know when I got my license, but, the commercial license, but I started working on the commercial radio. Something was around 68, and they were all tube radios. And when you went out of service call, you had to take a tube caddy, sometimes two, plus your toolbox and whatever test equipment they bought for you, but which that was pretty much nil. Oh, yes, but there was nothing better than being home in the shack. Oh, look at this, phone's ringing. Yes, QRX1, I'll be right back.
Please.
K2QDN is back.
WA2UEE.
Bob's in there. WA2UEE. K2QDN.
See, I've been listening to you guys, well, ever since we had the problem there. But, you know, you forget about the people like myself that are not allowed to have antennas. And I'm lucky I got an antenna on the dresser here. And I go on the Echolink. And I enjoyed the Echolink. I mean, we've never been discourteous or anything like that. We always had a nice bunch of guys on there. I would get on there every morning. And I'd talk to my buddies over in England. And we would have a round table going. We'd have Germany, France, and everybody else come in there. And it was a very good net, might as well say, we had. And we never caused any problems. But the way you guys are knocking the Echolink, if it did come back on, I'd be kind of embarrassed to go on there. Because you say, there's Bob, he's on Echolink. Why don't he do something about it? But I can't. All I have is a little antenna on the dresser here, and I enjoy the Echolink. Because I talk to a lot of guys all over the world. Other than that, I would have nothing to do. I mean, I'm 86 years old, and I enjoy the hobby very much, but now it's kind of seems that you guys put the squash to it that I don't know. So that's all I got to say. So back to you, Mike.
WA2UEE K2QDN. Bob, was that aimed at me or the Metroplex organization in general?
What do you mean, Mike?
Well, I told you, as I told you this morning, that I have really no use for EchoLink. And your comments just now, were they aimed only at me? Or was that a statement at large so anybody involved with Metroplex would hear that EchoLink is an important part of your daily schedule?
No, Mike, it wasn't directed at you. I mean, what the heck? I ain't going to get mad over it or nothing like that. You made the statement, and also Armin made the statement. And I just come back and told you the way I feel about it. I mean, there's nothing personal about it. I mean, I'll still talk to you. Mike, go ahead.
Okay, Bob, but as our conversation this morning, you could still do it on a computer, which you have. You know, it won't be the end of the world if EchoLink is no more. So you still can use your computer. And, another repeater that, in fact, has EchoLink. But we talked about all that this morning. No sense whipping a dead horse. Okay. And let's see. We're on the subject of hot tubes. Oh, yes. For Walt and Armin, and I don't know about Jerry, but nothing could beat the old days when you turn on a radio and the smell of the tubes warming up with the dust on them. It just couldn't be equaled. And you'd look through the holes in the cover and see them filaments are glowing. I mean, that was like interactive radio in them days, you know. Nothing was better than to use an amplifier that you could see the plates on the tubes. And you could watch the damn plates glowing as you modulate. Oh, that was even better yet. AE2AA, I think. K2QDN.
WB2KZX.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, I'm off my landline call. Like I said, tubes were great. I only have one tube set left, and that's a Drake 2B, circa 1961. I've had it since that time, and it operates beautifully. Little insensitive, I guess, as you go higher in the frequency, but still a great receiver. And I have one transceiver, a 902DM, that still has the Japanese version, or 12-volt version, of the 6146Ds. And I can load into anything, even a bed spring. But as far as most of the other tube equipment I have, it just got too noisy, too hummy, too electric consuming, and also try finding parts. I don't know who's next in rotation, so I'll give it to Armin. This is WB2KZX.
Okay, Jerry. Yeah. Well, I started playing with tubes probably in 1946, 47, something like that. I was only a boy. I was just 13 years old. And by the time I was 14 and 15, I was transmitting over the broadcast band. I had a big long wire up on the roof and a homemade transmitter made out of old radio parts. The chassis was Philly cigar boxes, the cardboard cigar boxes. I would push holes through, you know, poke holes in them to mount the tube sockets and stuff like that. And like Mike said, because he heard the story, it was a lot easier than working with metal chassis for a kid that didn't have metal working tools, you know. But, you know, throughout the 50s, tubes did a good job. good job in two-way communications, even in VHF. Take the, not the 50s, even the 30s, late 30s. In my work with aviation, I was in aviation electronics for about 5 or 6 years. The VHF transceivers used for communication with the towers, they were excellent, you know. It was not unusual to receive those communications from an airplane at 70 or 80 miles away. When I was a kid, I built a single 6J6 oscillator mixer receiver that worked into my car radio in my old 40 Buick, and I heard airplanes as far as Scranton, PA, calling into the airport to land, you know, to Idlewild, as it was in those days. So, you know, they served a good purpose, and if society was smaller today, if we had a far less world population, we'd probably still be with them because we wouldn't have had the number of scientists around that could develop the solid-state stuff. And I think we'd still be happy. I don't know who gets it now. I guess turn it over to Walter, I guess. Yeah, pick it up, Walt, WA2SHA.
Okay, that puts us back in rotation again. We got a little screwed up with myself and Jerry having to take landlines. Okay, I need to say a couple things. First of all, when I said, this is directed to Bob, so you understand, you know, you've been on the air almost as long as I have. I've been on the air since 1958. Enjoyed the hobby very, very much. Then there came a long period where I was not able to run a RF because I lived in an apartment. And as I said, I would have been very happy to have Echo. But let me say this much, and I know you were saying that you have a condition where it's the computer, okay? When I did use Echolink for 2 years, I used the computer and I used my own connection, except for once a week or maybe once every 2 weeks, I would have my buddies sign into Metroplex. So I wasn't tying up the Metroplex repeater, you know, that very much. So as Mike says, if you really had to, you could probably run a 20-inch screen and on Windows-based operating systems, they'd have something that my brother used, because he had glaucoma and he couldn't see anything. And what he did is he used some of the features that the magnifiers and the speech and this and that, that's available. So, you know, it might be a beneficial thing to be able to use your own computer and, you know, be able to have a very positive method of getting on. I think one of the problems that you may be having is entering the number of DTMF digits correctly each time. I think you have a problem with that, and I must be honest with you. I would love to hear you on, believe me, I don't ever wish you the inability of not being able to use Echolink. So, just want you to understand that in case you heard comments from me. I just, myself, favor the tradition of RF whenever possible. So that's my feeling there. Now to get back to tubes, I guess I could be facetious, Armin and Mike, and said maybe we ought to run 4X250B amplifiers with maybe 36-element stacked beams, you know, and we can extend the range of 2 meter a little bit further. But I'm being facetious, that's for sure. Okay, I don't want to hold it too long, so I'm going to pass it on to Mike. Oh, by the way, Jerry, I do have a pair of 826s. Still could be run on 6 meters yet with an old onset amplifier. And I have run 4-125s, 250s in the past, too, but that's on HF. So over to you, Mike. It should be Mike. A2QDM and the group, AE2AA.
AE2
K2AA, K2QDN. Oh, Gonset amplifier. Ah, yes, the old vintage days. Well, you know, when I first started in 2 meters, that would be 1963. It was AM, horizontally polarized beam antennas. That's just the way it was. Crystal control transmitter. You know, you call, and the receiver was a communications receiver with a converter sitting up ahead of it. And that's what you had. And you'd call CQ, and you'd be tuned, and you'd, you know, tuning slowly up the band, because you were crystal controlled, and pretty much a lot of other guys were. And then you'd go up, and the first guy that you could hear, he's the guy you talk to. So everybody always fought to get the crystals closest to the edge of the band. Oh, well, that's the way it was in the, what we didn't think so, but was, looking back, the good old days. And unfortunately, we've progressed. Yes, we've progressed. I've got some of the old HeathKit stuff here, the SB, well, you guys know that, so there's no sense telling you. And, all right, well, we can't go back. And the only good part about today's radios is they're a hell of a lot more stable. And the digital displays, man, you can put them smack nuts on a frequency. In the old days, no matter how good the radio was, there was always, you had to go with crystal calibrators and try to get that pointer in the right spot. And even then, it was hit and miss. Today, Jesus Christ, you go down to the cycles. And let's see, who's next on the list? Well, if I got the list right, it's going to head back to Bob. WA2UEEK2QDN.
Yeah, okay, fellas, I don't have too much to say. I was going to sign off. I didn't just want to go away without saying anything. Yeah, Mike, I remember the old Goonie boxes. Back when I got my license, 1961, all crystal controlled and everything. Many a times I repaired that, you know. So, but anyhow, fellas, I'm going to say 7-3s. And, yeah, Mike, I know you were talking about me going on a computer. I do have a laptop computer, and I will look into it, and you know, I'll see what I can do. But I like the RF here, and oh well, what are you going to do, you know? So I will check in on the computer and see what I can do. I don't know the first thing about it. Turn it on is about all. Put my password in there and go on QRZ. That's about it, you know. I was never that interested. But I will see what I can do, and I will get on the X-Plane somehow, or on the computer, or whatever. So with that, fellas, I'm going to say 7-3s. Nice. You know? So I'm going to say 7-3s all around, and Mike, probably I'll catch you tomorrow. And if not, have a good night. So this is WA2UEE. Good night to everybody, and have a good evening and a good day tomorrow. 7-3s, guys. Back to you, Mike.
All right, 7-3s, Bob. All right, I think you got a little bad connection with your microphone, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. And if my idea of a list is correct, Jerry's going to get it next. At least that's the way I got the list here. If not, whoever's really next can hate me forever. However, that's it. What do we got going on here? It's 81 degrees, 49% relative humidity. For anybody who was out today and had to work outside, the humidity was super duper, especially right after that rain early this morning. At one point we were sporting, I think, 86% relative humidity. Temperature wasn't all that high, but holy smokes. When the sun come out and caught that water, this has been one hell of a July. Let's hope this is going to be the end of it, and we don't have an August to look forward to that's even worse. Oh, how did we ever survive without air conditioning? WB2KZX, K2QDN.
Thank you, Mike. You guys must have been rich because I had a heat tour, a heat sixer, and a heat tenor, if any of you remember what those were. And they were, I guess, my introductory radios.
The tenor I didn't have the license for, and by the time I got licensed for it, it was long obsolete. I used the sixer and the tour. In fact, I used the sixer for many years up until I bought a KLM 661 and a Lunar amplifier. And I got to tell you, you talk about accurate frequency. I don't think that receiver, I think, was a really hot super regenerative, and it was a single crystal, if I recall. You know, it's very hard to remember because I had equipment a long time ago into the parts bin. But it did allow me to operate base and mobile, and 6 meters could only be done, thank you CBS TV, could only be done in the car. Other than that, that was my introductory equipment. I'll turn it over to Armin. Maybe he remembers it. This is WB2 KZX.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember them.
Yeah.
Super regenerative receivers. Oh, there goes the phone. Let me see who's on just a second.
Hey, Jerry, this is QDN. I remember the tour very well.
Found. Mike.
Got you on there. And we'll just say real quick to Jerry, yeah, I had a Drake 2B2, and I consider that a real big breakthrough. So when you get it again, we can talk about that too. I'll stand by, wait for him.
Well, it must be important because Armin is tied up. Drake 2B. Oh, was I ever in love with that thing? However, that was, I don't know what year that thing came out, but it was nice. I could never afford it, though. And the HeatKit Tour, I actually never owned one, but I built one for a friend of mine. But anyway, all right, so now this thing is, let's see, Armin's on the telephone, and, Walt, I guess you should have got it anyway, but AE2AA, K2QDN.
Okay, Mike, good enough. AE2AA here. In the group. Yeah, I would have gotten that info, I suppose. We'll make it that long. Yeah, I was truly in love with my Drake 2B, and if I recall, it wasn't all that expensive. Probably was certainly no more than $500 on it. It was a great breakthrough. You know, that was the first really sideband receiver. That's the way I call it. I loved it. I used it with a Harvey Wells TBS Bandmaster and my own high-level double sideband adapter. Okay, what it did is it was double sideband with suppressed carrier. Okay, and that went into the Univox 6 meter pair of 826s and a 5 element beam. So that was my day, 37 countries worth. Yeah, great receiver though, right, Jerry? You had one. You still have it, I guess. I still think my brother has it around here someplace. I haven't seen it recently, but it's pretty good. I had a lot of other things, too. I went through the same kind of affair. I would put a 416-based 2-meter converter onto the receiver, and I think it was 10 meters I tuned, if I'm not mistaken. I was able to have a good time on 2 meters as well, and we did that for 6 meters, of course, because the receivers didn't cover 6 meters. Like they do with the transceivers of today. Let me just stand by and see if Armin's back. I guess not, so I don't know. But those are the good old days. So like you say, you can't go back to those kind of things. But we had a good time in those days, no question about it. We had to get our hands wet, so to speak, instead of being a appliance operator. Mike, well, today is advanced class appliance operators. We barely understand how they work. Maybe I don't understand it very well. But those were the good old days, that's for sure. Hey, the newsletter is going to be coming out in those days. Sort of holding it off a little bit until we don't know where everything's happening. Man, makes it rough on a guy like me to have to put the newsletter out of where it's at. Get all my stories together, get all my dates together, things like that. But I like doing it. Jerry, I'm going to turn it back to you. If you don't hear Armin in there, you pick it up. Armin, are you in there? This is AE2AA in a group.
Nothing heard. So this is WB2KZX. My Drake 2B has been operating now for 49 years. How I got it was I had always lusted after the Drake 2A. The Drake 2A was the predecessor to the Drake 2B. When I was a kid, that was the receiver that I desired. By the time I scraped enough savings to buy the Drake 2A, which, by the way, was more expensive than the Drake 2B, the Drake 2A had gone out of production and the Drake 2B had gone into production. Drake 2B was an upgraded version. It concentrated more on the Drake 2A. Sideman was a secondary thing because of the product detector, and AM was the primary receptor. My Drake 2B, over the years, has been modified. The reason was in 1961, I bought it in April. What happened was it started to have a... I had to let it drop. So anyway, 1961, when I bought it, I started to have some problems. And the chief engineer at Drake at that time sent me a modification, which I still have. It's yellowed paper now. And it was to put in a little heater, a little 15-watt resistor in it that heats up the rig, so when I turn off the 2B, it's constantly being heated by this resistor that keeps it, the receiver, stable. And that was the beginning of many, many modifications. My Drake 2B can receive FM with an outboard IF that I made with JW Milliparts. I have a noise silencer. I have the world's only 2B where I actually put in a noise silencer that was meant for the Drake 2C. I also modified the A bands on it. You know, you had five auxiliary bands, A through D, A through E rather, and I modified the A band so it receives 160. That was a common modification. But I think I'm the only one with a noise silencer and FM reception on it. Anyway, let me turn it over to Armin, if he's not there, who's ever next in the loop. This is WB2KZX.
WB2KZX, K2QDN. Jerry, do you remember what year you got your call? I assume that's your original call, right?
No, it isn't. WB2KZX came about 35 years ago, and one of the reasons was I was traveling. And in those days, whenever you changed your location, you changed your call. Even though my family has owned this house since 1962 and other houses in the neighborhood since 1950, I did a lot of traveling as a young guy, you know, between all the places that I did. And what happened was in 1975, what around that period of time, 76, they stabilized the calls. And one of the problems with me as I travel, you know, I fail to upgrade a lot of times. So WB2KZX has been, when they froze the call, which I believe was in 75, kept, then after that you kept your call for life, unless you wanted to become an amateur extra. I had numerous calls, call signs before that, but, you know, they were WN, KN, and K2s, not K2s, K6, you know, and that's basically, none of them were really calls that I liked up until this one. And I never really was a believer in vanity signs or anything like that. So I decided, you know, to keep the WB2KZX rather than change it. But I've had this one for 35 years. And it's now on my license plate, and it's actually my identity. I used to be one of these guys, you know, like every 6 months I had a different call because I was living in a different place. Back to you all.
Okay, now the reason for my query, my original call, this is a vanity call that I got. My original call was WB2AIF. And I can recall, man, I came home from school and I was looking for that letter from the FCC with a call. And in them days, they were down to the WA2Zs. And I said, ooh, you know, they ran out. And the next one they picked was WB2. And I get on 2 meters. I'm just a new technician. You know, my first time on the radio with my own license. And people are calling me because they never heard such a wacky call. And that was 1963. So WB calls are getting very rare. I hated that call the day I got it. And this call's only, I've only had this one probably less than 5 years. It was always WB2AIF. But I always didn't like the, I always liked the K call. And came time for the vanity. I thought long and hard, and I thought back to all my contacts, and the one that stood out is, what call do I remember the most out of the whole pile that I've ever worked? And it always came back to quarters, dimes, and nickels. In fact, that guy's still alive. Was WA2QDN. He lives over in... he's in Long Island somewhere. And the call is still active, according to the FCC. But I used to talk to him on 2 meters back in the 60s. Oh, well. Anyway, that's why I'm just curious about the WB. All right, so now we've just thrown everything in, out of rotation again because, well, I give it back to you. And I think then you're going to give it to Armin, but Armin seems to be on Echo Link. Oh, no, he's on the telephone. WA2AA K2QDN.
Let me check and see if Armin's back. Armin, you back there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, why don't you pick it up and then give it to me, okay?
Okay. Yeah, well, I heard most of the conversation except for this, you know, short time I was on the telephone. But at any rate, you know, this is, if you really add up the number of hours that the repeater's been used today, I don't think it ever had this kind of service since Alex days, you know. It really got its use today. This Echolink thing really started something going. And we're probably having a better net than ever. I really mean this. This is the true RF way of having a net, you know, RF-only way. But I suppose along the line, the Echolink will be straightened out again, and it'll become, you know, inbound only. We'll try it out and see what the heck happens. And, you know, we will not go back to the DTMF tone access. That's out. And whatever happens, happens. Let's see what kind of troubles we have. You know, they may not be serious. Well, we hope not. And I hope Bob, you know, is able to learn more about the computer. I think the more he does study the computer and the more he learns what the computer can do for him, he's going to get more and more interested in it, and I think you really start to enjoy these things. There's nothing like Bob sitting at a laptop communicating with a headset and a microphone, you know, one of those headset mics, talking to guys in Europe and all, perfectly clear and all that. He'd be able to do a great job that way. I mean, that's really the way to go. That's the Cadillac way to go. Okay, Walt, yeah, you pick it up. This is WA2SHA.
Okay, WA2SHA, this is AE2A to group.
Yeah,
well, look, I've always been a mouseketeer myself. I feel that clicking on a node number is a much more positive way than trying to decode DTMF tones with all the variations that happen. Of course, like we discussed, there are systems that work very positively with DTMF tones. This is what we got, and this is what we need to use. Thing is that, you know, it's a great thing for, say, like Roberto, our friend who has moved to Mexico and still is a member, a dues-paying member of this club, and will continue to do so as long as he has a chance to chat with us once in a while. I owe him an email, and I'm going to bring him up to speed. But, you know, it's nice that he could check in to the net or talk to any one of us when nothing's happening, you know. And, of course, we have Bob. He's no longer a dues-paying member of the club, but he likes to chat with the folks up here, too. So there are members that, you know, move away. As a matter of fact, I think Paul has a number of friends that have moved away that were members of Metroplex years ago. So it's a good thing to have the ability, but not to really let it run to the point where it becomes a problem for the majority of people. That's another way of looking at it. You know, when you have things like happen tonight, it makes it a little bit frustrating, I'm sure, for everybody. But anyway, enough of that. I'm probably going to make this my last transmission. It's really been great. I agree with you, Arne. Having Jerry in here, of course, Mike, it's always a pleasure to have you in any kind of a round table because you do contribute a lot of good stuff and a few fist fights here and there, but, you know, that comes with the territory. I enjoyed you talking about Anthony this afternoon. I hope you'll give my regards to Anthony when you do speak to him next night. Hope he's feeling a little bit better these days, that's for sure. Jerry, it's, like I said, it's a pleasure to have you in here. You add a lot to that as well. Hopefully, you know, even though this wasn't an official net at this particular time, I agree, we did carry on the purpose of it. And that's what I was hoping was going to happen. I was hoping we would have that of some kind. Get this over to you, Jerry, and I'll listen to this. I'll be making my finals with this transmission, okay? So, I guess that's all that's in here at this point. No, WB2, ZX is K. I mean, K is AZX. What's wrong? It's a long day. WB2, KZX, WA2SHA. And day 2, UGN, this is AE2AA, same I-73s and listening. This is WB2KZX. This is one of the reasons why it takes me longer to sign on CW. But I still put in the effort, but I only make half the QSOs everybody else does with the sleep. Imagine sending WB2KZX. Anyway, the WA2PIF, I think it was, then my receiver cut out. Unfortunately, as you know, I've been experimenting mobile, and I missed 5 minutes of that. If you could just tell me again what you were saying about the calls. So I'll turn it back to Mike.
All right, Jerry, I'm going to sign also. The hour's getting late. There's some things I got to take care of, but it was that my original call was WB2AIF. Always intensely friendly type call. And I never liked it. And when I first got it, everybody wondered where the hell I got it. And I couldn't wait to change it. And only, well, the last couple of years I got this vanity call. And that's about it. I'm not going to go over the gory details again. And I don't know why your radio cut out, but give it a kick. All right, I'm going to bow out of here also, gentlemen. And actually, it was my intent tonight to keep the repeater operating and see how good Armin knows how to build them. So I figured tonight we'd give it a smoke test. We'll talk as long as we can and see if we can burn out Armin's repeater. Oh, well. No wonder I'm so popular. Gentlemen, have a very good night. And with that, Jerry, I'm going to send it back over to you. And I guess it's only going to be you and Walt in there. No, you and Armin are going to be in there. WB2KZX, K2QDN, is also going bye-bye.
Well, Armin, it's just me and you. We've poured them all. We've thrown them out of here. This has got to be the longest net in history. Starting at 8 o'clock, it is now a quarter to 10. I'm glad you kept your call because WA2ASHA, I think, yeah. You're probably an O-line guy who associates his call as his identity, you know, and I can't see myself getting a new identity. You know, it's like changing my name. So many people know KZX. They keep forgetting what it is, but they always remember as soon as they hear that crazy call. You know, I've even been asked, you know, is that really a real call? And I said, yep, 35 years. But anyway, back to you, Armin.
I say, Jerry, and I go back a little more. It's a 49-year-old call. That's right, almost 50 years, half a century. So it's not likely that I'm going to go for a vanity call, that's for sure. I made up my mind when I became an extra that I would not change my call. That was while Alex was still alive and we were discussing that kind of thing. I said, I'm going to stick with what I got. That's it. Yeah, you're right about identity. That ain't going to change. That'll stay till I, you know, kick off for a final time when I sign out for good. Yeah. At any rate, this is the longest net we ever had since Alex's days. I'm sure back when Alex was alive, we had longer nets than this. But they were unusual days when cell phones weren't around, and, you know, the radio was a very convenient way of talking to people and getting out, period, other than using a landline, which you weren't around most of the time anyway. So, you know, we made history tonight. We'll go in the McGinnis Book of Records. Back to you, Jerry, WA2SHA.
Well, I hope it makes the newsletter. That's all I can say. One other interesting thing. I have been operating in my car, which is probably one of the reasons why I've been on the net tonight so long, is I put in these discrete antennas. You know, what they do is they turn the window glass into radiators. They were developed about 15, 20 years ago by Antenna America, if you remember them. And QST, I never really tested them. I wish that they had. You know, I've been operating with them with mixed results. They're better, actually, than an on-the-glass antenna, but they don't seem to be better than a whip. So I basically, you know, am wondering. Tonight, I have to, they're also highly directional. You know, I have to be facing a certain direction where they seem to have a greater load going front-wise than they do rear-wise. And, but that's the way of the future for me because I'm sick and tired of going through car washes and taking the antennas off and putting them back on. The other thing is how unsightly a lot of these mobile antennas are. This you can't even see. It goes in right underneath the liner in the headband or on the rear, where the communications antennas, they leave a little space in the glass for that. And that's what I've been using and experimenting with now for about a couple of years, and now I'm beginning to refine them. Back to you. This is WB2KZX.
Directionality is a big problem with that, I'm sure. That's a given, because you're closer to the automobile body's metal, you're more like embedded in it, and therefore rotation of the automobile has everything to do with the signal. Because I've heard you in bad orientations, and now the one you're in now is perfect. So there's a great difference in signal. When your car is turned the wrong way, the signal's almost inaudible to the repeater. But this way, whatever way you're facing now, it's very strong, and you're doing very well. Yep. If you can't get the wire outside, you got to pay for it, you know? A whip sticking out in space away from metal that shields it and all is always your best bet, let's face it. But, you know, if this suits you and you can do good, you get good results with it, you know, you can stick with it, you know. I don't know how you do on the road with it. We don't talk to you much on the road itself while you're maneuvering around, so I don't know. You know, it's only when you're static like this, it's fine. You got the right direction. Back to you, Jerry. WA2SHA.
I just heard the identifier. Someday soon, I hope to become the voice of Metroplex. Remember my recording? Anyway, that's probably why you don't hear me that much. I think that, when I'm operating, you know, I have rigs that are able to give me, with mag mounts, about 100 watt CRP. But I don't like that, because the amount of current it takes out of the battery, especially when I'm idling, create a problem, you know, for my electrical system, you know, with air conditioning and heating and lighting. And the car ideally only likes an additional 10 amps sucked out of it, and that's the maximum that they recommend in this particular car. But I got to tell you, one of the advantages to using this antenna is being in snowstorms, rainstorms. You know, not that I had a problem with the on-the-glass antennas, but they didn't actually stay for long term. My last car, I had it on the car for about 12 years, and I replaced antennas maybe 5 or 6 times. This particular antenna has been inside on the liner for almost 3 years with fewer problems. Of course, half the world doesn't hear me anymore, but when I'm within the local range of a repeater, it outperforms a handheld or, let's say, a mobile if there are any still running at 10 watts. Back to you, Armin. This is WB2KZX.
Well, that's exactly the way I felt about it.
Yeah.
You put it just the way I would have put it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, it's halfway between a rubber duck and a whip sticking on the car. Actually, maybe a little bit more towards a rubber duck. And, you know, being directional and all. And actually, a rubber duck is very directional, too, depending on how the person is holding the transceiver and which way he's turned to, you know. It's all arbitrary stuff. There's no formulas that can describe what a radiation system like that is really doing. The only way you'd have to make a lot of accurate measurements on the system itself. There are no formulas that you can express like for a handheld and a rubber duck, because the human body is part of the, you know, it's a counterpoise. And the resistance of people varies, and the way your body is positioned, and, you know, all that affects everything. So it's highly arbitrary. The only thing that's not arbitrary is a large piece of flat metal that's a few wavelengths in length or radius with a 1/4 wave
single element or monopole right at its center. That we know what that does. That's very, very, you know, well cataloged and has a perfect formula associated with it. The omnidirectionality and gain is all well known. Unfortunately, all other antennas are all variants which you have to experiment with, and you got to be happy with what you got. You know, you try and try until you get something and say, well, I'll leave it at this. This is, it's good enough for me. It's just not worth going any further. You know, that kind of thing. And that's what amateur radio is all about, especially at HF, you know, with small properties and all, where you can't run the longest of conductors, and you're still trying to run 160 and 80 and things like that. Part of the fun is, of course, you know, getting the best or most out of the least, you know. Back to you, Jerry, W82SHA.
The funny thing is, Armin, when I first heard about this antenna, it was in the early 1990s, and Antenna Americas was the primary seller of the antenna at that time. I think that company's been taken over by somebody. They're in Colorado. And oddly enough, the reason for the development of the antenna was a lot of undercover police, DEA, and government cars always, no matter how stealthy they made the cars appear, you would always be able to tell that you had law enforcement in the area just by looking at the antennas on the trunk or on the hood. These were the antennas that they first used for undercover work, for observation and surveillance, where nobody could actually tell that the car belonged to an agency that was in law enforcement. So that was one of the reasons I began to look at it. In those days, they sold the antenna to almost everybody, commercial, civilian, police. And then for some unknown reason, a few years ago, it became very, very difficult to buy them. So I bought a few to store it. Today, it's almost impossible to get this antenna out of them. I got to literally send them copies of my invoice to prove that I'm a current customer. And I don't know what the reason is for it, but I will tell you this. Operating with that antenna has given me tremendous peace of mind, especially with experimentation. The only other thing that I wanted to say was, I know what you're saying about the metal. Nissan has been experimenting for almost 15 years with diversity antennas that operate on that principle. But you have metal in the glass. It's metallic material in the glass that becomes conductive, and it operates 360 degrees. And I'm trying to find if I can probably in some future car see if I can buy that kind of glass. Back to you, Armin.
I never thought of it that way. Back when I had my old cars, I used to use the regular radio antenna for up to VHF with fairly good success. I've used the radio antenna for CB. I've used it for aircraft reception. And I've used it even in a silly way. I was broadcasting AM over the broadcast band over the car antenna, even though I found that I only could get back to the house but about within four blocks, you know. You know, how stealthy is that? An ordinary automobile antenna, which is, you know, present original equipment manufacturer in most cars, is just as stealthy as an antenna in the glass. People can't tell you're in law enforcement because you got a regular radio antenna, and they'll work well at these frequencies. You may have to worry about the lead-in a little bit, but then again, they use a variant of RG62, which is a 90-ohm transmission line, and shouldn't give that much trouble even at 2 meters. You know, the BSWR wouldn't be that high. It'll still work. back to you, Jerry. WA2SHA.
N2AAY disconnected. W2MPX.
Well, I'm glad that worked out. Anyway, funny you should talk about that. I owned a 1986 Somerset T-Type, which had a retractable antenna. Remember those radios where you turned them on and then the antenna rose? I had that in my Somerset T-Type. And one day, the antenna in cold weather froze because of ice. Couldn't raise it, couldn't lower it, tried to fix it, tried to oil it, and I killed it. So I went down to my local Buick dealer, and I bought one of these motorized antennas that fit in the same place. Not only was it AM/FM, which was compatible with my radio, but it also had the ability, it had a little plug coming out of it, the CD. You could tune it, and miraculously I tuned it for 10 meters. And I put in, I can't remember it now, but I had a 10-meter rig. I think it was one of those Radio Shack rig. It was AMCW 25 watts. And I operated it successfully in the Somerset T-Type up until about 1993 on 10 meters. Of course, it was only good like in the mornings, late afternoons, sunspot cycle highs. But that was about as stealthy as you could get. But like I say, that's one of the problems with one of those automobile antennas. If it's retractable, it's going to be affected by weather. If not, it's going to be knocked off in the car wash. Added to that, most cars today don't have an external antenna, at least the new ones anyway. Back to you, Armin.
I have the retractable antenna on my 95 Accord. Still works perfectly. Turn the radio on, the antenna comes up. You turn the radio off, the antenna goes down. Yeah. It works in the winter and the summer. Pretty reliable. I never tried it, of course, for different frequencies. The problem there is that the lead-in wire to the antenna is rather distant, because it's about 10 or 12 feet long, having to reach the radio from the back fender. And in order to use that for higher frequencies, there would have to be some changes made in that design, at VHF, especially the lead-in wire from the antenna to the radio would probably not be too suitable. But remembering an occasion I had over when I used to work at Teterboro back in the 50s, the mid-50s, with Bendix Aviation, I helped a fella build a 10-meter rig. It was plate modulated, your 2E26 final, and it was a doubler. It was a final doubler because we found that it was a lot easier to control. You didn't have to neutralize the darn thing. Of course, you paid for it in the fact that the wattage output was less than it would be if it was just straight class C, the fundamental. It put out maybe 6 watts. You had about 6 watts of 10-meter output from that 2E26. We married it up with the car radio and relays. We used some aircraft relays to switch the car radio from a plate modulator, the 26B6s in the car radio would plate modulate the 2E26. And the receiver was a single 6U8, which I designed, was no RF stage. Just a mixer, the pentode was a mixer, and the triode was a VFO. That was the receiver. And we used a car antenna on a Mercury. It was an old 53 Mercury that this fellow was running. And one of our first contacts driving up Industrial Avenue over to Hackensack during lunchtime was a Colorado 10-meter station. They were the good old days. I'll tell you, the propagation was never better. Imagine that. 2,000 miles off an auto antenna with a modified, homemade 10-meter transceiver. Back to you.
WB2KZX for ID. Well, I made a 10-meter contact to Germany, to a suburb of, I can't even recall the town. But I was fairly excited because I happened to be at 42nd Street and in Manhattan, 42nd Street and I think it was 9th Avenue. And boy, was I thrilled. And all the passengers in my car were looking at me like this was a joke. The man was lying. And I remember it. The middle of the summer, and it was on 10 meters. Actually, excellent, excellent signal. But most of the time, 10 meters was worse than some of the repeaters are today for their silence. You know, you'd call out a CQ, nobody came back. Before I had the Somerset P-Type, I owned a Jimmy. That's like the GMC version of the Blazer. I had that, and I operated in that thing everything from 10 meters to 1296. The roof had so many holes in it, you know, from antennas, that, you know, the car was...
Connecting to K2GLP repeater.
I carried...
W2MPX connected. Disconnected. W2MPX.
True fanatic, you know, before I became more the moderate that I am today in mobile operation. And it was absolutely amazing in those days, you know, to operate all those bands. There was much more activity. And I even operated sideband because I had a KLM Multi-2700, which was an all-mode 2-meter receiver, 661, which after it was retired from the shack, I put in the car. And I can't even recall what it was. It was a UHF that was manufactured by KLM and a transverter by KLM. They later became Mirage, and then they completely disappeared. I think they were bought by Swan. Back to you, Armin.
The Echo Link came over and made an announcement. It's only a part of your conversation. I really didn't miss anything. Those days will never come back. I always said that. I said it in the 70s, 80s, 90s. They were the 50s, the mid-50s, 57, you know, 54 to 57 or 58. 10 meters was as live as heck, and with 5 watts, you know, you could talk across the country. It was really wide open. It was the greatest. Because 10-meter stuff was easy to build then, and was well within the technology of vacuum tubes to do a good job at those frequencies, you know. That was, of course, using tubes of the current stage of television tubes of that day, which were developed for more sensitivity at high frequencies. I mean, 10 meters wasn't good for the old crap like 6SA7 and all of that, but we didn't use that. We used TV-type tubes like 6U8 and stuff like that, you know, readily available tuner tubes. After all, TVs had to work up to 216 megahertz in those days. You know, there was a Channel 13. So they had some capability, and they were not bad. Yeah. I remember talking about stealth antennas. The most stealthy antenna I had was a 35 Studebaker President, which has running boards and big, you know, wheels on the front and encased in a casing and on the fenders. The six-wheel, they call it, things, you know. That had a running board antenna, which fed into a car radio mounted on the firewall. That's how they used to install a car radio, bolted to the firewall, and then run cables up to a control head, which clamped on the steering column, so you could turn the tuning condenser and the volume control, you know, through like speedometer cables, transmit the mechanical motion. And yeah, that was a real old set, you know. It had 6A7 and 77 and 78, you know, the real old tubes and everything. sensitivity was awful. I guess because of the shielding effect of the running boards, the wires under the running boards were about only 1 inch away from the running boards themselves, which had a metal backing, you know, rubber top. But talk about stealth, well, that was the earliest stealth I know about, even though it wasn't much worth the crap. You couldn't hear a broadcast station like, you know, say, local WJZ up there in, which is now WABC up there in, what do you call it, Lodi, if you went, let's say, 20 miles out. If you kept driving on Route 46 until you got to Wayne, the signal faded out. You couldn't hear it anymore. That's it. You got about 20 miles from a multi-tens of thousand-watt station. Back to you, Jerry, WA2SHA.
Well, I never really had much success with two mobile equipment. Don't ask me why. I don't know why. You know, in those days, I used to generate power from vibrators. I don't know if you recall vibrators. My first solid-state power supply that was able to supply, you know, like the Swan equipment, which was the first of the more sophisticated equipment that I put in as mobile, it just never worked right, plus the space. It wasn't until I got... I'd say my first successful mobile operation was with when I had a 1971 Opel, and I was able with that car to do all kinds of installations in it, and it was in those days, just to remind you, it was AM as well as FM, and you still had enough AM operating, especially on the lower portion of the dial, to make it worthwhile. But FM was beginning to become popular. I don't know why AM completely disappeared. Sideband actually, you know, took off in the 70s, but seemed to have died, except for contests now, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. The only thing that revived sideband, I think, was satellite work, the portable. But it wasn't until they came out with decent solid-state equipment that I had any success with mobile operation. I'm sure you did with tubes, but I certainly didn't. The only good thing I could say about them is that it was easily loaded into antennas, not like today where you have to really be on the button with standing wave ratio. Back to you, Armstrong.
Well, naturally, when I started playing with radio, solid state was not even invented yet, you know. Or it was, but it was still in the laboratory. The first transistors available for hobby use were 1955. You couldn't get them before that. And they couldn't do anything. They were audio transistors, for God's sake. So, in those years, in the 50s, tubes were it. Solid state was out. Vibrators were still being used. I built a lot of vibrator stuff. What else can I do? I built one dynamotor transceiver on 6 meters for my brother, and it still exists. A guy still has it in his collection. These were 6-volt automobiles, too. 12 volts had not yet come out. And if you needed more power, of course, power like 50 or 60 watts, you had to go to dynamotor because the vibrator power supplies were more or less limited to about 10 or 15 watts. And the dynamotors were noisy, naturally. It's best to keep them in the trunk because, after all, it is a high-speed motor generator set. That's really what it was. But they could put out substantial power. That setup I had there was about 450 volts at roughly about 100 milliamperes that the dynamotor provided, which was ideal for running a 6146 on 6 meters and getting about 25 watts out of it, you know? And my brother used that rig for a while in his Volkswagen Beetle, was a 55 Beetle with 6-volt system, you know?
Oh, yeah.
They got by. We got by. And the stuff did work. Back to you, Jerry.
Yeah, it was putting in, I don't know if you remember the manufacturer, KDK. KDK was the, they used to make some nice nifty little 10-watt FM transceivers. And that was the first of the small, decent operations that I had with 440 and 2 meters in that Opal. After the Opal, I had I'm only talking about the cars that I used for mobile operation. I had a Buick Skyhawk. That was a hatchback version. And that I operated. I was able to put in 160-watt KLM amplifiers in that, operating off of 10-watt rigs. And sometimes I'd have the Mobi 2700 operating in there on a stand. It was absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe that those cars had that kind of room. Then, during that period after that, I went to the Somerset T-Type, and the Somerset T-Type, I only operated 10 meters. The first truly built-in, where it was built into the dash unit, was when I had the G20, and I operated at that time a Yaesu 5100, which I still own, by the way. It's amazing that I've operated so many antiques over the years and they work. But the most successful operation was my second car, which I kept for many, many years. That was the Jimmy. And the Jimmy, everything from 1296 all the way down to 10 meters, every band. This was before 900 megahertz, of course. But every band. And I want to tell you, I one time parked in Winedance. You know, it's not too far from Farmingdale, where I worked in those years. And somebody came up to it and said, "Man, I'd like to report a story." I said, "What the hell are you talking about, report a story? Who are you?" And he goes, "Aren't you Eyewitness News?" And I looked at him. I said, "No, I'm an amateur radio operator." The guy walked away disgusted. What do you think of that on?
Yeah, that is funny. You had a lot more experience than I had in, you know, rigs in the car, because when the 50s passed, I sort of let ham radio go. I got my, you know, I just sort of, in the 50s, most of my work in the 50s was helping other hams do things with ham radio, because I didn't have a license. I didn't have a ham radio license in the 50s. I just didn't have the inclination to get one. You know, telephone commercial in 1957, but I still didn't even get my ham radio license until 1961, after I got out of the Army. But I helped a lot of hams during the 50s get started in building HF and VHF rigs. It was more fun to design them and build them than it was to get on the air for me. And that's probably true even today, because I'm not much of a, you know, an amateur operator. You could say I hardly operate at all. My main activity in the 50s was high fidelity amplifiers, you know. I went through the whole gamut of a lot of different amplifiers and loudspeaker systems, preamplifiers. Oh, I built everything, tape recorders, built everything from scratch, you know. And that was the real fun days. Someday I'm going to formalize the list of all the tube projects that I built in that period of time, probably between 1947 and 48, let's say, to 1965 or 70. And you'll be surprised. I remember every tube is listed. I made a handwritten, documentation of it, of what the item can do, what it was, and what each tube and how it functioned. And I'll, when that's all formalized, I'll put a copy of it on PDF on the internet, you know, on our website or something, and let people read it. It should be a lot of fun. That's what I was really into with those days, you know. But when it comes to power, when you needed power out of these old cars, you had to go to Dynamotor. Vibrator can definitely not hack it. If you had the current to drive them, you know, good strong 6-volt battery or maybe two batteries, one in the trunk, you know, you could run quite a few hundred watts off those damn things. They worked. They just were clumsy. One famous Dynamotor was the PE-103, which was a big, heavy motor generator set with a box on top. They used to sell it very cheap over in Radio Row. Used to be able to buy it for about $30, and, you know, I wouldn't recommend carrying it home on the subway, that's for sure. You had to be over there with a car. It weighed about 70 pounds. But that thing was capable of a few hundred watts. Back to you, Jerry. WA2SHA.
Harmon, can you stand by for just a second? Somebody's ringing the bell. Hold on.
W2MPX.
WB2KZX. Just a little explanation, Harmon. I'm sitting in the car. They come to the front, and then I have to explain why I'm leaving the car. Actually, they're visiting my neighbor. My neighbor just let them in. So, I never really was a believer in dynamos because of the amount of maintenance that they required. Dynamos required on the DC side brushes, and I knew many hams that had them, and they needed them for high power operation, but I will say this, the vibrators weren't much better, you know, eventually they had a short lifespan, but I went to Radio Row in the early 60s, and I bought the first solid-state inverters, and they really fit the bill, used less power consumption, and you were able to power higher power radios with it. But the truth be known, it's until they came out with decent 12-volt systems, you know, Kenwoods, the Yaesus, Collins at the time and the Drakes, until they came out with alternative power supply, which many of them did. You know, if you bought the 902BM has a 12-volt power cord. The KLM 2700 had a 12-volt power cord. As a matter of fact, during a whole period of time, I wouldn't buy anything that didn't have a 12-volt power cord, so I could operate it in the car or operate it in the house and save a lot of money that way. But that is pretty much it. You know, I knew a lot of guys that operated with dynamos, but I got to tell you, it was like unbelievable the amount of interference that the noise that came out of them and the amount of suppression that you required. That was the sound that came out of your radio. If it wasn't that, you heard a whine. Back to you. This is WB2KZX for identification.
I have to realize my first 12-volt car was a Studebaker Commander that I bought in 1958. Everything else was 6 volts, as I remember. Yes, that's right. All 6-volt cars, so I have a lot of experience with vibrators and stuff like that, which is the only thing you could use. Besides, there were no good solid-state switching transistors in the 50s that could handle a power supply. The first solid-state power supply I came across in my life was a switching supply in 1961 made for the Air Force, because I was working on an Air Force contract at that time for a company in Hoboken. And it was used in a transceiver, an aviation transceiver. It put out, for the transmitter was about 70 watts, about 70 watts HF, 2 to 30 megahertz, made for the Air Force. It was tunable in 1 kilohertz increments, had a synthesizer in it. It was all tube, naturally. It was the Collins 618T, a very famous transceiver. And
very few hams could get a hold of them because they were always expensive. But believe it or not, 2 to 30 megahertz and 1 kilohertz channels all the way up. Very, very nicely made transceiver. And it used all the common tubes we can think about today, you know, what we used to talk about. It had 6146 vinyl in it. The Air Force at that time had decided to get rid of the dynamotor that they were using to supply it and use a switching power supply because switching transistors were becoming available that could be reliable enough to possibly work with this system. Naturally, this system worked off 24-volt DC power, which was standard for aircraft for so many years. The switching transistors used were 2N1100s, which are a germanium transistor. There were no silicon transistors yet. And as far as our tests are concerned, they were not, eyes would short out. These transistors would give up, especially at higher temperature. Germanium transistors were sort of crummy. So it really wasn't until the late 60s when they were able to do really anything good with switching solid-state power supplies. They always had a problem, and they needed a little more development. Of course, by the time the 70s arrived, at that time you had good ones. You had silicon switching transistors that could handle it. But that was the beginning, and it was not for the public. It was for the Air Force. These 2N1100s ran $30 a piece to replace. So you wouldn't think of having that kind of switching power supply in your ham rig. Back to you, Jerry. WA2SHA.
Yep. Yep. I remember that Collins rig. I remember seeing it being sold surplus for many, many years. I think the last time I actually saw it for sale was out of that surplus place in Kansas City. I think it was in 1988 or 89, maybe 90 at the time. And I remember, it was always something that I desired, but what turned me off from buying it was the fact that it, everybody who wanted to sell it, every supplier who wanted to sell it, listed the weight of the unit. That was the one drawback to owning that unit, is how much it weighed. Maybe it was great for a B-52 or a B-47 or a B-36. Actually, probably it was in the B-36, maybe. Who knows? You know, but definitely not really good for like a Buick Wildcat or any of the other cars that I ever owned. Just too much radio for too little car.
Oh, yeah, well, it was, it's a big, you know, trunk deal. You had to put it in a trunk. It's a big square, you know, rectangular box-like. It was, probably weighed about 55 pounds or so, something like that. But it was made in large quantities by Collins and was used mainly in fighter jets. That's where they put it. They started putting them in fighter jets in the 50s. And the Air Force did not want to get rid of these units because they felt that they were a significant investment. They had a lot of jets that still had them in it. And they wanted to go SSB. They wanted to convert these things from AM to SSB. And I was involved in a project of looking into methods in which we could convert them to SSB. There were two particular methods which I can't go into here. They're too difficult to mention. It'd take all day to talk about them. But at any rate, they did accomplish it. RCA finally took the contract. And that was the one that the staff I was working with recommended. They used that method of SSB where they turned the 6146 into a linear amplifier instead of Class C. And they were able to install a small extra chassis. RCA was able to install this this plug-in, which and some wiring changes, which turned it into an SSB and AM rig. And the Air Force was very glad to convert thousands of these things and reinstall them into their fighter jets. So they had maybe another 20 years of use before they got rid of them in the 80s, you know. Yeah, it worked out. RCA
all of the sets. RCA was the major contractor for the 618T. And I spoke with engineers from RCA who had a lot to do with it in those days in the 50s. They used to come up to Hoboken, and we'd be in the lab and going over the various points of this transceiver. It was very well designed, and the people who were working on it, especially Coleman, Mr. Coleman, who was a great guy, he was the project engineer, design engineer, and he was just a pleasure to listen to in describing the functions of this radio. I was so impressed with that set. It had two tuned RF stages, three tuned intermediate RFs, a couple of local oscillators, three mixes, you know, three conversions. It was a very well-designed radio. Back to you, Jerry, WA2SHJ.
Armand, I think you've forgotten the most important feature of the 618T, and that was its immunity to electromagnetic pulse from atomic explosions. Back to you.
Well, that's a good reason for using it in a fighter jet, I guess, especially during a Cold War. no doubt. And it also had a built-in antenna tuner. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, it was very, very hard set to use, though, for an amateur radio use. Very difficult set to convert for use in an automobile. One of the reasons, the primary reason, or two reasons, really, is one, the 27-volt DC supply that it required. You can't run that on 12 volts. You need 27 volts. The next thing you needed is 115 volts, 400 cycle for the plate supply and for the servo motors that operated the automatic antenna tuner. And the tuning, what do you call racks, the tuning racks, the typical Collins cores, remember, that were like about 15 cores on a tuner table, and they would move up and down. This was all servo motor driven by 400 cycle servo motors. So where the hell would you get 115 volts, 400 cycles at about 20 or 30 watts in an automobile? Back to you, Jerry.
Well, to answer that question, one of the things that interested me at that time in the 618C was the fact that, I don't know whether you remember it, but they used to have these books that Howard W. Sams used to publish called Surplus Conversion. Surplus Conversion 1, Surplus Conversion 2, Surplus Conversion 3. And there was these ingenious people who used to come up with 12-volt conversions or 115-volt conversions to the 400 cycle system and to the 28 volt system. I think you're wrong about 27. I think it was 28 or 26. I remember an even number for some reason. Back to you. This is WB2 KZX for ID.
Nominal, you know, you talk 27, 28, 26. The range, the actual operating range was wider than that in aircraft. You couldn't expect the aircraft to hold exactly the correct voltage because they use DC generators mounted on the back of their piston engines. I know the B-25, for instance, had two generators on each engine. Each generator was 200 amperes, 28 volts was rated at. And they were regulated by the normal reed regulator, the type that used to be on the early automobiles, you know. And they needed all that power. That's 800 amps of 27, 28 volts for the gun turret motors and all the weaponry they had to handle on the thing. There was a lot of, and the radio equipment, of course, to mention that. Some radar equipment as well. So, you know, the DC voltage was nominal. The 115-volt 400 cycle was nominal. Very difficult, though, to modify those sets for 12 volts. You know, it might be ingenious, but you wouldn't want to do it. Honestly, you would not want to do it when you see what you had to go through. It involved a lot of times of rewiring filament strings and things like that to parallel from serial. And remember that these radios were treated for antifungal environments, like, for instance, for use in the tropics and all. And they had this varnish that they sprayed on all the components and wiring and made it so hard to solder or unsolder these components or even move them around, like glued everything together. Back to you, Jerry.
Well, the reason, I guess, those conversion manuals came about was, if you remember the R25 series and the BC600 series, these were the old command sets, were fairly easy to convert. So as the equipment became more sophisticated, as it came on the market, a lot of people were not doing conversions where they actually dug into the set. A lot of them were sealed with epoxy, especially in the early part of the 60s. You're right, the humidity and to prevent moisture. The conversions that I'm thinking of are the actual power supplies that were built to plug in. In other words, a completely separate unit that operated. For instance, I remember one particular conversion covered changing 60 cycles to 400 cycles by having one of those oscillators or step-up converters that was able to generate 400 cycles. The 12 to 28 was done with oscillators that converted to AC and then converted back to DC. And that's the way it was done in the later rigs. Nobody actually dug inside it. You're right, it was a little too complicated. As far as being hard to operate by a hand, the reason for that, I think, was the synthesizer that went one kilocycle steps. Why are we using kilocycles? You see, this is what you've done to the armor. Kilohertz steps. Because I remember a lot of the markings were KC. Back to you, WP2, KZX for ID.
Those days it was kilocycles. There was no kilohertz designation then. So when I speak of the old days, I speak of what, you know, how it used to be spelled out on those rigs. It was kilocycles. 1,000, one kilocycle per step. They had a nested ring of three tuning knobs, which made it fairly easy to access any one kilohertz section of the 2 to 30 megahertz frequency range. And as a demonstration, once the RCA people came back with a modified unit, we put it up on the roof of a Hoboken building about four stories high. And we prepared the antenna, which was nothing but a piece of number 14 building wire stretched between a water tower and the operating point, about 100 feet, 100 feet of number 14 straight wire. And Mr. Coleman sat down. He was licensed to be able to operate on Air Force frequencies. None of us were, of course. And all of the hams that worked in that company, about five of them, came up to the roof to witness the demonstration. And Mr. Coleman, one by one, contacted, without any problem, the Strategic Air Command stations, like in Australia, and one in Alaska, and one in Japan, and these guys, these amateurs, were just crazy about that set. They say, why couldn't we have something like that, you know? I mean, that was one of the most impressive demonstrations ever run. And no ham at that time have ever seen something work so damn good with the automatic antenna tuning and the instant change of frequencies and all of that. Boy, you wouldn't believe how well this set worked. Back to you, Jerry.
Well, that was Collins. You know, it was initially their design. RCA was no slouch in the conversion. But frequency synthesis at that time was done, I think,
think, in that rig with Crystal. And you're right about the three knobs. Oddly enough, you know, about, I think it was late 60s, early 70s, I ran into a ham that built one, I'm talking about the same type of oscillator. He had built it for AMDX, if you can imagine that. The people back then who used to do that. And he did it for the broadcast band for between 520 to 1600. And the way he did it was he did it with a group of oscillators, three frequencies. One was to change the above 1,000 kilohertz and one below 1,000. I think one was, the first one was just a two-step switch for 500 to 1,000. The second one was from 1,000 to 1,600. And then he had increments of 10 kc's beating against it, and then 1 kc increments beating against that. And the whole purpose was that he could receive overseas DX, because the European band plan was at 9 kilohertz as opposed to 10 kilohertz like it was in the USA. That was the first time I saw frequency synthesis, and he had said he had gotten that idea from looking at the Collins 618C.
Back to you, Armin.
Some of the radios that Penny's used to sell had jumpers in them that could be converted from 9 to 10 KC too, because the same radios were being used in Europe or exported to Europe as they were to the United States. And I wouldn't doubt whether some car radios today even have some kind of doodad inside on the printed circuit board that you clip off or short out or what, that'll bring you to the European 9 kilohertz separation. It probably exists today. Today, of course, it's much simpler because it's a microprocessor control system of frequency synthesis. It didn't involve all of the complexity of multiple crystals and all kinds of heterodyne systems and filters, you know, like they did back in the Collins days. No. I can still draw a block diagram of that darn Collins 618T. I never did forget it after 50 years or more. It was a very shrewd system using a variable IF of 2.5 megahertz and all of that. Yeah, very, very shrewd. Using certain common frequencies and double and triple mixing and all of that, you know, to simplify the structure. And, of course, today we don't have to do that anymore. We don't even have oscillators. We use digital frequency synthesis. The oscillator is gone. The concept of an oscillator really, no longer exists. The sine wave is built out of the pieces of it, basically. The digital frequency synthesizer, like in my R8500 ICOM receiver, is strictly builds the sine wave geometrically. And there's no such thing as an oscillator in the darn thing. Back to you, Jerry, W-A-2-S-H-A.
Well, Armin, I'm going to have to make this my last go-around. Nature is calling. Anyway, I agree. I wasn't aware that Jason Penny did that. The only radio that I know that receives universally where you don't have to clip is Sony makes a tuner, a nice cheap little $100 tuner that receives AM, AM stereo, FM hybrid. They call FM HD high definition, but it isn't correct. It's hybrid definition. And Sony makes one little tuner that receives everything universally, whether it be 9KC or 10KC or even 5KC. I don't know who the heck would be broadcasting that. No, I'm mistaken, 6KC. And you're right. Everything's digitized today. There is no such thing as an oscillator. which accounts for the fact why everything's so stable today as opposed to the oscillator. Anyway, that's it for me. Nature Call. I'll see you at the next meeting. What can I say? It's been a real pleasure, Armin. We've kept this going for 2 hours and 46 minutes, according to my timer here. So, with that, I'll say 73. This is WB2KZX signing, clearing the frequency, but just listening for one last final.
Okay, Jerry.
Yeah. We sure stretched it out. We stretched the net out to a McGinnis Book of Records record, and I don't know if it's going to be beaten. I doubt it. I doubt it'll be beat anytime soon. And anyway, so it's been a lot of fun talking about some of this old stuff, and I'm glad you were familiar with the 618T, you know, because that's sort of a memory I'll never forget. And I like to talk about an intricate transceiver that had an awful lot of features that people would expect to find today, even in sets. I mean, that was, on paper, it looks very impressive, even up against some of the specifications of some of today's amateur radio sets, as far as frequency, range, power, and et cetera, modulations and whatnot. That's an interesting history. But anyway, okay, Jerry, we certainly will see you at the next meeting, and I hope the weather has changed by that time. It looks like these 90s are going to continue for the next couple of days, if not a week or so. It just ain't going away. You know, and I hate to think that a winter might occur that's really bitterly cold and all, not as a result of the hot summer, but that would be a hell of a combination to have to go through, to have a bitter cold winter after this miserably hot and humid summer. But that's the way the weather is. It's random, and we don't know what to do about it. Okay, good night, Jerry. I'll be signing clear and off for good. You know, it's QRT for me. And I'll probably just be laying around until, like, I usually go to bed around maybe 12 o'clock, so I'll be hanging around doing some other things. Good night, Jerry. And it's been great talking to you. WA2SHA, QRT.
WA2MD, disconnected. W2MPX, W2MPX. Rescue, K2 DES Mobile, Tappan Zee Bridge.
Hey, K2 DES, Tappan Zee Bridge, KB2, Signal Queen.
Hey, Paul. I'm going down to East Tremont again. You're going to be around. I'll be there for a couple hours.
Okay, we're getting ready to run over to Jersey. There's a stopping. Sandra and I, so I got my morning off. Sort of planned out there. Go ahead.
Alright, well, I told you the next time I go over, I'd call you.
I think you like working in the city. I think you like it there here in the Bronx.
Yeah, on the contrary. Yeah, today's Julie's birthday, so, I mean, you know, I gotta get over there, get done, and I gotta be back by 4, because I'm taking her out tonight for her birthday for dinner to Applebee's, and then I'm taking her over to either Yonkers or Monticello, so I don't want to be playing around over here all day long.
Yeah, we're going up tomorrow to Mohegan State, Mohegan State, Mohegan something casino, Mohegan Casino. I mean, I think it's in Connecticut, Dave. And pass the birthday greetings along to the bride when you get back. And, yeah, it's supposed to be a nice day. It's not supposed to be so hot. I turned the AC off last night because it was nice in there. It dropped down to 68. Would you believe that?
Yeah, it was probably in the low 70s up by me, so. But anyway, yeah, you'll like Mohegan Sun. Have you ever been up there yet?
Negative. Never been there before. In fact, I cut something out of the paper about 3 weeks ago by joining the club. The first time joining the club, I'm going to get $100 that I can spend there. You know? So I think that's pretty nice, huh?
Time tomorrow up at Vodka.